Hello. Good evening and welcome to Women Living on the Verge of Evolution. I am Leah Young, your host. Tonight finds us in week 17 of the Women Living on the Verge of Evolution Telesummit. And I am very excited that we are having with us tonight Dr. Tamae McCallan, who is the founder and CEO of Oracles of Truth. And I will give you a more in-depth introduction in just a moment. I just want to remind you that we begin the call muted just so that I can get through the introductory portion. And then I will unmute the call, and you will be able to comment or ask questions throughout the discussion. We really want to invite you to engage with us this evening. And thank you for joining us one more time this week. So, again, we welcome tonight Dr. Tamae McCallan, who is the founder and CEO of Oracles of Truth, Incorporated. She holds a doctorate in education in educational leadership, a Master of Education in Instructional Technology, and a Bachelor of Science in Mechanical Engineering. And she has more than 15 years' experience in new media, education, instructional technology, information technology, and in the engineering fields. Dr. McCallan is also known as Shinshuri by members, fans, and followers of Oracles of Truth. She hosts Oracle Radio and Oracle TV. She's created the Integrated Personal Transformation Leadership Program to demonstrate the feasibility of a practical, research-based, holistic educational model that teaches students how to effectively acquire and use knowledge to unleash their greatest potential, attain their life purpose, and manifest success in all spheres of their life while being of selfless service in the community. And tonight we're going to talk a bit about that program as well as how we as women and humanity can refresh our potential based on the wonderful work that Dr. McCallan is doing. Welcome, and thank you so much for being with us tonight, Tamae.
Oh, thank you for having me on the call so that I can share with the world what we're doing and what we're up to and how all of us can make a difference for one another.
Yeah, it's a blessing, the work that you're doing. And I wonder if you would tell us a little bit about what you're doing with Oracles of Truth. What is Oracles of Truth, and you know, why Oracles of Truth?
Well, to answer your question, what is Oracles of Truth? Oracles of Truth is a number of things, but first, it is a learning experience. It's an experience for anyone who wants to unleash their greatest potential and step into a fully self-expressed life. That's the first thing that it is. The second thing is that Oracles of Truth was actually given to me. I had an experience several years ago where I was going through some transformation in my life, some changes in my life, and I was contacted. That's what I'll say. I was contacted, and in the course of being contacted, and I'm going to make a distinction here between being visited and being contacted. Well, in this moment of what people would, what an average person would call an epiphany, I call it an angelical moment. It was a moment in my life where I was coming out of some past pains and suffering and everything, and I was sitting quietly alone in Illinois at the time, and I was contacted. There was an opening in my consciousness that just opened up as if something was connecting to me and giving me information, just kind of like downloading into me. Mm-hmm. And at the time that it happened, it was the first time that I actually felt it so vividly, so almost like if someone were to touch you on the top of your head, you actually feel that energy or you feel the touch. Well, this was like someone touching or connecting to me in my mind, but no one was there.
Mm.
And at that moment, I had an instant transformation. And all I could do was just stop and say, I don't know why you're here, but whatever it is, I'm ready. Those were the exact words that came out of my mouth. And the next day, the very next day, I wrote the foreword to my book that I'm writing actually right now. And it was almost as though I wasn't writing, but it was as opposed to me taking dictation. As if all of it was already in me, but it was coming through me, and I didn't know where it was coming from, but I was just allowing it to be, allowing it to channel through me. And so that happened, and that led to some other experiences, which would be a lengthy conversation right now to talk about, but just know that there were some other experiences that happened to me, which I would call, well, I wouldn't call it paranormal, but most people, if I were to describe it to them, they would say you had a little bit of paranormal activity. But for me, it wasn't paranormal. It was more, and I can understand from someone looking out at from me, you know, observing and me explaining it would probably assume that it was a paranormal experience. But because it happened to me, it was not paranormal. It was almost as though I knew that it was a level of existence beyond human comprehension, beyond that there was energy forces or beings that were able to communicate to me, but beyond our understanding. And so that's how Oracles of Truth was given to me. It came to me through my open willingness and connection to just allow the knowledge and wisdom to channel through me, and it was given. And I was given specific instructions of what to do and how to go about doing it. And so I've been on a growth path ever since then of personal transformation for myself and for everyone else in the world. So that's what I've been doing over the last couple of years, and Oracles of Truth is an outgrowth from that experience, which almost like if I were to explain it, as if I were awakened to my true life's purpose, why I was born, why I'm here at this time, and it's just the number of things that have been happening just over the last few years, and even now today, even as I'm talking to you on the phone, I am embracing what is unfolding for me. Just even being on this call with you right now is a testament to the ever-changing turns that my life has taken. Because, you know, 3 weeks ago I didn't even know you, right? So here I am, and I'm sharing this experience, and I'm going to be at the conference, and I'm going to speak, and just accepting and embracing unknown certainty, which I mentioned to you once before.
Yeah.
So that's how Oracle Truth came about.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I know that it is, Oracles of Truth is an integral part of what you're doing with the Integrated Personal Transformation Leadership Program. Would you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. With the Integrated Personal Transformation Leadership Program, it started 6 years ago, even before I was contacted, right? It started with me having a vision of what education could look like and what it could be for everyone, okay? And I did my dissertation centered around the competencies that would be needed to actually start from a vocational perspective. It wasn't until I was really halfway through my doctoral program in the educational leadership piece of it that I actually started to consider the possibility of expanding the model that I had. But it was too premature at the time, and I was so focused on the vocational piece of it that I kind of let it, you know, go to the, you know, it entered my consciousness, and then I let it sit to the side. Well, after I had that experience and being contacted and having my angelical moment, it all became clear of why I needed to combine the vocational piece with the leadership piece and its connection with consciousness and intelligence. And so that's when the real work took place. I would say the real work of not just me, but this higher energy that was challenging me helped me to connect the dots between what I was doing in my research and how what was that experience of what was happening to me could actually be combined into a holistic program that would teach kids how to tap into their energy source within, the same energy source that I was being led and guided to. I was being chosen. I was told that you're being selected and you're being positioned to do this work. And so I just accepted it, and I said, whatever is required of me, I'll do it. And so I started planning how to combine what I call vertical and horizontal skills. And the integrated personal transformation leadership is the result of that theory-based model of mine. Well, vertical skills are those skills that all of us have in a specific discipline. Say, for example, in engineering, you have all of these different branches of engineering. They could be considered vertical, just kind of like vertical markets. You know, you have healthcare, you have transportation and manufacturing, you have finance. These are all vertical markets. Or in engineering, you have mechanical engineering, civil engineering, chemical engineering, aeronautical engineering. All of these are disciplines within the engineering discipline, but they're all verticals. They are independent, segmented branches of the engineering field. Mm-hmm. Well, in education, somewhat that's how we operate in education. We teach kids on a specific, and adults too, we teach them a specific vocation. We provide them with the knowledge in a general area, in a specific area, and then we say, here, go off into the world and you be this doctor. At the expense of the horizontal skills, which they have been developing throughout their entire lives. So at the same time, elementary or grade school, you know, kids are getting more of somewhat of a holistic by, you know, giving them math, science, and all of these subjects. But even still, at the expense of them developing their consciousness, their ability to be a human being, there are these horizontal skills that you acquire, and you don't necessarily have to go to school for them because it's an innate part of who you are. You don't need to be taught, you know. After you learn those fundamentals, you know, eating, going to the bathroom, and those things like that, there are things that you never have to be taught, such as thinking. Thinking is something you don't have to be taught to do. You do it naturally because it's an innate part of your being. And so when we put kids through a curricula that is siloed to focus solely on the tangible aspects of their intelligence, which I call the vertical skills, then and at the expense of them not getting their horizontal development, which would be things like leadership development. Right now, if you want to be a leader you get the skills that you need to be, you go to some kind of curriculum that's focused on leadership, and you learn that outside the context of all of your other skill sets. And so what I have been given is a model that doesn't separate the skill sets. And it says, with this holistic integrative model, a person is a whole person, not a siloed set of skills. And so therefore you can give them, help them develop their vocation while they're developing their leadership skills, which is a horizontal skill set. Communication is a horizontal skill set. These are skill sets that you use regardless of what discipline you're in. If you're an engineer, you got to know how to speak and talk to people. You find leaders in engineering just as much as you find leaders in the law industry or in business or in, sports. There are leaders, and these are the kinds of skill sets that qualify to be called horizontal. Creativity is a horizontal skill set. It is not something that is siloed to a unique discipline. And so with that, I created a set of within my field, education, I developed a skills inventory for the vertical aspect of it. But since then, since I was given the leadership piece of it, I've since added this vertical set of skills that are competencies that are horizontal regardless of what discipline you step into. And so the idea is to help develop kids and adults to embrace the integrative faculties that they already have. You know, when you teach a child, you don't teach them out of context of speaking, which is a communication skill. And you don't teach a child to read and write, that's done in every discipline. They need to know how to read and write. That's a horizontal skill set. So it's not something that's separate. But for some reason, we get to certain skill sets like leadership, and we want to separate it out from the curricula. And we want to say, well, you know, to be an effective leader, you have to go take this leadership training. No, well, why isn't it integrated into the whole process of them getting their bachelor's degree? If they're getting a bachelor's degree as educators, they should come out already leaders. That's the idea, that they would already be imbued with that leadership qualities because you're teaching that to them as a part of their curricula as opposed to as an afterthought when they want to advance in their profession within an organization. This is just one aspect of how this model can be viewed. I mean, it's not by any means an exhaustive example of the scenarios in which you can look at the world and say, these are areas where I see this is missing. I'm just using this discipline of education as one example. You could apply it to engineering. You could apply it to manufacturing. You can apply it to business and finance. I've just chosen education as the field or the model by which to have this come forth because of the need of education to expand and evolve with technology.
Well, as I listen to you describe it, it sounds to me as if you have a program which will teach individuals how to be more of who they really are, to not separate out their creativity and their compassion and all of those parts of themselves from the parts of themselves that may be more task oriented or career oriented that's what it sounds like. And when I think of that, I think about what we're doing with women living on the verge of evolution is trying to presenting to our listeners different teachers and visionary thinkers such as yourself who have transformational stories of their own and who are working to help others transform and integrate themselves. So it sounds like a very wonderful parallel, what you're doing. Yeah. And I wonder what your thoughts are on you're educating both men and
women. Yes. This is not limited to any specific gender.
Yeah, so I'm wondering what your thoughts are on what you see the ramifications being for women with regard to the program, to this program. How do you see it affecting the future of women?
Well, because of it being an integrated model, it's a non-dualistic model, is what it is. See, the thing is most of the world we've been living in has been centered on, you know, sequestering certain groups of people based on their gender or what classification they fall under, right? Certain groups have been underrepresented or suppressed because for a long time, women have been seen to be more domestic, you know, their role was more domestic, you know, and that men, if they get married, the man takes care of the family, the woman stays home, those kind of viewpoints. Well, with this model, it's more integrative, and it leaves very little room to cut people off from opportunities of learning and expanding and growing because of a classification or an identity that social norm wants to identify them as. Like for women, for example, women will not be that whole idea of the glass ceiling goes away because now with this model it's a performance-based model that is non-dualistic, that integrates and is inclusive. It's an inclusive model that says, I am able to accomplish whatever I set my mind to. If I have the clarity of mind and consciousness to say that this is what I want to do, there should be no other barriers outside in the world that limits me other than myself. So if I am self-imposing that barrier, that's one thing. But if that barrier is being imposed because of the infrastructure, the society that I live in, then maybe we need to relook at the infrastructure and modify and transform it. So the idea with this model is to open people's thinking to what's possible for anyone that says what they want to do and what they want to accomplish, and let them know that there is no limits. Accept the limits you set for yourself. You know, and why should I be measured in terms of performance against my peers? Now, this is the way organizations have done it. You'll hear people say, well, this is the way we do it. This is how we've done it for so long. But I'm not challenging the fact that you're doing it. I'm challenging the fact that you're not even challenging the fact that it's been that status quo for so long that you're accepting because that's just the way things are, as opposed to really looking at what we're doing and analyzing, is this the best thing for us? Should we continue to do this? And assessing what we've been doing in the infrastructure we're actually working in terms of organizations and how that groupthink continues to permeate in our culture. So, yeah, people are doing it because it's been doing it for so long, but why are we still accepting it and not challenging that status quo and saying, does this still serve us to do it this way, right? So this is why this model brings a new approach. It's going to help people see performance and capability and human capital management and all of the talent management stuff in a new way. It's going to help them understand that, why am I competing against my peers? I really should be competing against myself to better myself, because there's really, according to, you know, the whole stepping into your greatness and the whole, you know, there's oneness in all of the world and the theories behind us as beings, there's only really one of us. So if there really is, who am I competing against? Myself, right? And if I look at you and I see that you're a reflection of me, then why am I competing to outdo you, but rather to help us both excel and accomplish more, right? Because once one of us gets it, then the idea is that we become exemplars for others so that they also get it too. not so much that we want to stand out and limit them, but to enable and empower them. And that's what we're talking about.
Mm.
And that's what this model of education is going to do. On top of that, it's also going to show our educational infrastructure, the way that it exists, that there are ways to sustain yourself without always running to the federal and state governments for funding. So there's another piece to this that we're trying to do. It's kind of like revolutionary. And like right now, most state, you know, institutions of higher learning are funded through either federal or state funds. A large portion of their funding comes from that. And the second piece is that a large of their funding comes from butts in seats, tuition-based, meaning that it limits the number of people who actually have access to education, because if you can't afford it, then, yeah, it's less likely that you're going to go to a higher education or get a four-year bachelor's degree or a master's degree because you just can't afford it. There are there's this notion out there, this accepted norm that there's the haves and the have-nots in the world. Well, with this model and what we're trying to do with Oracle the Truth is show that education is your right, just like your birthright to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in this country, that you should have a right to a higher education, not because you can't afford it, but because that's what you want to do. So we want to make education accessible to people. And that's another piece.
So your model is going to create balance in our society in the future between men and women, but it's also going to educate more people.
Yes.
And teach them more about their interdependence.
Mhm.
Yeah, yeah. Could you tell us a bit about, or would you like to talk a little bit about what it means to refresh our potential? What do you mean by that?
What do I mean by refreshing your potential? Well, if you have been one to view education from the traditional way of viewing it, the idea here is to refresh your thinking on what you thought you was the correct way, or what you believed in, or inculcated to believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we want to give people an opportunity to take a new, fresh look, change the lens, right?
Mm.
Change the lens by which you view education. And so take a fresh look at yourself, and you have to start with you first, because you can't help anyone else if you don't get it yourself. So it's just like, if I want to enable and empower people, I have to be an exemplar of that very thing that I'm talking. I have to be able to, this came through to me as I was being given and I was writing initially, and I have to be able to learn to live inside my own ideas and my own teachings. If I'm not living the very thing that I'm promulgating and talking about and speaking on, then how is someone else going to want to, you know, follow me? Because I'm not practicing what I preach. I mean, it's that old adage that you hear, you know, from when you were growing up, teach a child in the way it should go, and when it gets older, it won't depart. Well, that's because tradition tells us that these things work. And I'm not saying that the things that were traditional in the past didn't work. The question is, do they still serve us today based on the changes that have happened in the world and what's coming for us? We all know that the world is changing and that there's a new emergence of consciousness that's starting to happen on the planet, and we're all feeling it. Some of us are experiencing it, others aren't. But because we are, we're at a pivotal place where we can influence and help others who may be struggling a little bit more. And so in order for you to be able to help and enable and empower other people, you have to get yourself right. You can't help and teach and be an exemplar for other people and be a support for other people if you haven't had it solidified that within your own life, and then once you get it in your within yourself, then you can reach out to others, and you can let your light shine because you've already done it. You know, you can't let your light shine, and you can't draw more people in if you haven't already done it. And so that's what that's all about.
Tell me about the selfless service aspect, because, you know, you mentioned a number of things that I definitely espouse in my work, particularly with women, is we have to create some awareness of who we are on a whole level. We have to identify what our light is and begin to live in harmony with that. What about the aspect of service? What does that mean to you and your program?
Well, with the selfless service piece, there's a number of things that it means. First, the idea of selfless service is to transform the thinking of capitalism. There are ways to make money and still truly be a philanthropic service. Not everything that you do has to be done with profitability in mind. And if you want to live in a world, and I remember when I was younger, and I'll use this as an example. I remember when I was younger, when I had one of my friends tell me, we were talking about, you know, society, and I was like, I wish I lived in a world where people just loved everyone, and it was like, oh, that's a utopian society, and it'll never happen, right? So you know, and I'm like, you know, people can, I mean, I have that much love in my heart for people, and I know that a world can be manifested where people actually care about each other. I am my brother's keeper, okay? And when I had some of my friends would tell me that, and I would look at them, and because I had that kind of thinking, I was considered not normal, or, you know, that I lived in this lofty world of possibility that would never happen. And I thought to myself, well, the reason why it will never happen, because we got people like you who sit back and say it ain't going to happen. Yeah, that's what's wrong with the world, that we have these naysayers out there who tend to, you know, tell everybody what's going to happen and what's not going to happen, and they promulgate these ideas out there all along, making reality what it is because they're refusing or resisting the possibility of something different. And so the whole thing about selfless service, if you want to live in a world where everyone has, and I'm not talking about labeling here and calling a new system of thinking, you know, communism or socialism, you know, that's the problem with the world. We always want to label everything. We want to say, well, if it isn't this, then it's got to be that. Why can't we just look at things and just say that's what it is? Why do we have to put a label on it and say, well, she's fat and this and that, or this man, he's gay, and why do you got to label him? Why can't he just be a man? Why can't he just be a being existing? You know, that's really what's going on, but all of these other labels we attach to it, we identify with. Well, everyone wants to know what gender you come from, or what country you come from, and what nationality you are. But I'm a woman, and I'm a woman first. But even before I'm a woman, I'm a being. I'm just a living being. I'm a spirit first. So let's get beyond all of the labels and everything, and let's look to a society that has selfless service in the heart first. And as an outgrowth there, everyone will be taken care of. There is no one who has a need or want for anything, because we're all contributing to the system. So, you know, we say, when people talk about when things don't go right, well, the system or they, well, who's they? Who are they? When you start talking about, well, you know, the system of things and the way things are and society as a whole. But who's society? You live in society. You are a part of the very system that you're talking about. So how can you exclude yourself? You're not excluded when you talk about they and, you know, them over there. But them over there is just like with the whole global warming and the trying to find, you know, energy efficient fuels to sustain the planet and stuff like that. And I hear people saying, well, you know, we got to do this, we got to stop doing this, we got to stop doing that. Well, you know what? Unless we all stop driving cars, you're a part of the problem. If you get in your car and go to work every day, you're part of the problem. So the system that you're talking about, you can't really point the finger over there because you're a part of that system. It's almost like walking around with a veil over your eyes, thinking that everything outside of you is the problem when actually it is you. You are everything that you're. It's that notion. And so the idea of selfless service is helping people to realize that not everything should be done just for a personal gain or for financial means, that there are truly altruistic reasons in the world to really fight for something, like the notion of a super conscious state of being for everyone to experience and know. That is a worthwhile cause that all of us could be moving towards, and we don't need to be paid to do it. So what? Imagine a world where if you could actually live, and people will say, well, you sound like a little bit like Star Trek, right? But it's a visionary thought. Star Trek is a visionary thought, and the only way for people to start thinking is for some of us to start moving in that direction. And if we want to manifest that, then we may not have everyone on board. You know, and I had one friend of mine that was talking to me. She said, "Well, you can't convince everybody to me. You're not gonna convince." I said, "I'm not trying to convince anyone. See, I'm only allowing my light to shine brighter. And with my light shining brighter, hopefully it will touch, move, and inspire enough people that they will do the same. And when they do the same, we don't need everyone to do it." And so I'll use this as an analogy. If we're in a stadium, and we'll take a football stadium with a dome on it, okay?
Okay.
And you put thousands of people, we'll say millions of people in the stadium, and it's completely enclosed, and you give each one of them a candle and a set of matches. Okay, and you give each one a candle and a set of matches, and you say, "It's dark in here. Can you all light your light?" Now, you give them the choice to light their light if they want to make it brighter in there. Well, not everybody needs to light their light in order for everyone to experience luminosity. Now, do they?
Right, correct. No.
Okay, because if we want enough people in this stadium to enjoy light, just enough, we just need a threshold. We just need the minimum number of people to make it bright in here for us to experience whatever it is we're trying to do. Everyone in that stadium doesn't have to light their candle in order for light to be experienced. See, it's kind of like that whole analogy that you've probably heard when you were younger, birds of a feather flock together.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's kind of like that, right? So I don't need to convince everybody to live consciously like me. I just need to do it to it myself. And when I do it, enough people will see my light and say, oh, I'm touched, moved, inspired by that. I want to do that. And then enough people, there's going to be some people who are going to say, I don't want to do that. They're naysayers. We call them naysayers, right? I'm using that as a term, right? We call them naysayers. We don't want to do that. Well, that's fine because you're going to experience the luminosity of light anyway. You're going to benefit from the fact that all of us over here are actually letting our light shine and we're bringing more light and conducting more light in the world. It's just like if I use this as an analogy in terms of thermodynamics and oxygen, you know, I know that I'm breathing air, but do I necessarily have to see it to know that it's there?
No.
Right? So
no, you don't.
You don't. So, like, if I start to have problems breathing, then we're going to start wondering what's going on with the air, right? You're going to look to find out what is causing the problem of you not being able to breathe.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's that kind of thinking. It's that thinking that says, I want to go beyond what has been accepted as the norm or the status quo. And so that's where selfless service comes in. I'm saying that's the kind of world I want to manifest, so I need to start living it myself. If I can't live it, how can I expect other people to live it?
Wow. So you really are talking about several revolutionary ideas. The idea that we can actually help each other and not threaten our bottom lines. And you're also saying it's okay for us to take a stand and be different and not try to get everyone else to go along with us.
Exactly. Because all you need is enough people to see what you're doing, and they say, hey, I like that. I want to do that. And then enough people, and most people are followers, so they're going to follow right along.
Mm-hmm. So we're just allowing what is to just be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, if I want to live in a world full of hate and harm and people fighting and wars, then I just keep accepting what is and don't do anything about it.
Hmm.
If
so
I want
we,
to change, yeah, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say we got an online question, because we can have people write into us, and we have Jerry in New York who wants to know how you feel the personal transformation, integrated personal transformation leadership program will affect global transformation.
Oh, that's a wonderful question, because that's the whole purpose of Oracle of the Truth. I'm going to get it first, which is personal. But because I'm going to do it and I touch others, it'll cause a domino effect around the globe. So the idea is that we will start in the United States with the IPTO program, but we don't want to stop there. By no means, we want the borders that divide people, we want those borders to be non-existent. That's the kind of world I want to live in. I want to live in a world where I don't have to worry about crossing over to Mexico and immigration. That's the kind of world I live in, because I know that those people, or the Mexican culture and the African culture and the Russian culture, they are just reflections of me over there. They are who I am, them over there. That's the kind of world I want to live in, that I know I see God every time I see you. So if I can't even accept you and you're standing right here in front of me, how can I say I love God I've never seen? These are the kinds of, you know, it's not a religious thing. It's just saying that I have the eyes of God peering right here in front of me. How can I say I love something that I've never seen when all that I need is right here? All that I need to know about, God, or what people call source or energy, is manifesting every day right here in my own living room. Sure. On television, when I hear President Obama, when I hear, great basketball players, when I watch them on TV and they do some of the magnificent things that they do in their professions, and I see, the athletes running, playing tennis, doing those kinds of things, that I actually see that that's a manifestation of God right there. And if I can't look at my fellow human being and see deity, then how can I even say that I even know about the esoteric wisdom that exists in all of the cosmic universe? How can I even say that I relate and I'm able to identify with that and know that? I'm experiencing it right now. How can I be in denial when the very thing that I say I want to know is right here in front of me?
Amazing.
So that's my answer to the person in New York about the global thing, that I want to live in a world where I know that there's only one of us. Everyone that's on this call, I feel and I know, understands what I'm talking about when we talk about one mind, one consciousness. There is only one of us. We only think that there's two because we look different. We're focusing on the differences and not the similarities. The similarities is that I'm a spirit in human form. I'm a manifestation of deity walking around in flesh. You are too. And if you are, then what is the problem in understanding that when I cross another border or I go to another country, that I'm actually meeting myself? When I meet someone, when I actually meet someone new who I've never seen in that form, is actually myself reflecting back at me, just in a different way. So this is what we're talking about. And when people start to understand that, then these differences, the idea of separateness goes away, and the idea of unification and love and oneness emerges. And that's what we're talking about.
Do you think we're ever going to come to a time, because I'm hearing you talk about, you know, a boundaryless world. Do you think that we're going to get there where we don't need a passport, there is no Mexico, there is no United States, there is no Asia, there's just the world?
Well, you know, when you look at it this way, the only reason why there are borders is because we have enough people in fear that live in the world still. Okay, we have enough people living in fear that we still need it, okay? But we're talking about a transformation that needs to happen, and it's not going to happen overnight, okay? But I can envision a world, okay? Just like the earth is transforming, it's going through this. It shifts. There's going to come a time where this planet is not going to be able to sustain life anymore, and we're going to have to do something. But in order because the planet is transforming, we need to transform with it. And if we stay the way we are and the world transforms, well, then we'll be at effect to whatever happens to us, because now we're not in sync with the process of life, which is to change and transform. We know there's only one constant in the world. Everyone that you know that is up on what's going on right now will tell you there's only one constant, and that's change.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. And so if you know that the earth is changing, then what needs to happen with the species on the planet?
Mm-hmm.
It's a part of that life cycle. It needs to change too. And if it changes, then we're going to be at effect of what happens, because the earth is not going to pick who lives and who dies. The earth is just going to transform, because it's a natural part of the process of life to change. It cannot stay constant. And if it does, it defies the laws of the universe. Just like if we try to, people are fearful of change because, you know, for whatever reason, they're fearful of change. There's a lot of people who are fearful of change. You know, they want things to be the way it was. But actually, change brings newness. It brings rebirth. It brings opportunity. It brings so many other things. And so I can see a world. Actually, I actually see us lifting our consciousness to a higher level, to where what we experience as life and reality today is going to be so ancient that we're going to be like, wow, why were we so adamant about changing and trying? We're going to new opportunities to see beyond where we are now, including possibly going into other dimensions of the universe, that we're going to be like, why did we want to try to stay stagnant? That's the kind of visionary thinking that I'm on that growth. I want to be whole. I want to be whole, and I want to be in sync with all of life, and that is to change and transform. However it needs to happen, it needs to happen.
Wow. You know, you're going to be here in Las Vegas, and we mentioned that at the top of the call. You're going to be here September 16th through the 18th for the International Convocation. And I know you're going to be talking a bit about being whole and about that change, being that change entity. Can you give us a little bit of an idea what you are going to talk about?
Yes, a little preview. Here we go. So my topic for my keynote is living an awakened life. And I say that is because there's many of us, and a whole lot of us, are walking around weak, eyes wide shut. I mean, their eyes are so wide open, but they're closed. You know, and they're like, almost close your eyes and you don't see anything, right? Have you ever been able to be in a place that you didn't know, close your eyes and know exactly where you were going and get there?
Yeah. Every now and again. Yeah. A dream, maybe.
Have you ever been to a place that you go on vacation, say Bahamas? And I'll use this because it was an experience that I had once before. This was maybe 6 years ago, and this is even before I had my angelical moment. But I went to the Bahamas, and I did not know. I had never been there in this life. I'll say in this life, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Meaning the
mm-hmm.
life that I hold right now in this energy space.
Right.
The life that I am as Tamay today, I did not know this. I had never been to the Bahamas, but I got there, and I knew where to go to certain places that I had never been. And for some reason, I was able to, you know, when we were out riding on little mopeds, and my friend was like, I don't remember how we got. I was like, don't worry, we're just going to take this turn over here. We're going to go, and we'll be fine. And she was like, well, how do you know that? I was like, I don't know how I know, but we're going to be fine. And so, you know, and she was baffled, like, how did I know? She was like, have you ever been here before? No, I've never. But I know that I have been there through astral travel. Before we went, I actually astral traveled over there and saw the place and then came, you know. But you remember it when you're in your wake state. That's the key. See, most people in their dream, why do you think you go to sleep at night? You think you go to sleep just to rest your body?
We go to sleep so our soul can have some fun.
Most people think they go to sleep because their body needs rest, right?
Mm.
No, it's the other way around, darling. Your soul needs rest.
The soul is like, is she finally going to lay that body down and let me out?
I can go get re-energized at the source. Because you go commune and you get more instructions on how to live your life.
Mm.
You see? But the thing is, half of the time when you wake up, you're forced to forget because there's no learning if you remember.
Yeah.
If you remember,
wow.
There's no learning. Right?
Wow.
The idea is for you to evolve to the next level. This level. Okay? So
mm-hmm.
we're at the very lowest level of human manifestation of life. Life in all of the universe, if you can fathom, just for a second for me, if you could fathom life being of all types, a myriad of types and forms and sizes and levels and everything, just imagine that for a second.
Uh-huh.
And if that's the case, then human manifestation is one of the lowest levels of life and existence. There is another level beyond human form that is much more awakened, heightened in terms of conscious level of being.
Mm-hmm.
You know how like when people say, well, I had this paranormal experience, you know, if there were no other levels of physical manifestation beyond human form, you would not hear people talking about ghosts and spirits.
Mm-hmm,
obviously,
mm-hmm.
There's another level even within this human realm that we have recognized is there, but we can't necessarily touch it or see it.
Mm.
But every once in a while, you might get a glimpse of it by a spirit or someone coming. Now, I've had paranormal activity where spirits actually come because they really want to cross over. They want to cross over, and they get stuck. Because they think they're still alive. And so the soul gets stuck, not the body. The body has already been done away with, but the spirit is longing. And then this is the problem because people, there are souls that attach to the body as if it is who they are. You are not your body.
Uh-huh.
All right? And so this is the identity crisis that most people are walking around in on the planet. So I'm giving you a glimpse of my talk on.
Yeah.
Right? So who are you is the question. And if you're not your body, then who are you and what are you? Why are you here and where are we going?
Wow. So that's the ride you're going to take us on.
That's the ride I'm going to take you on. And I'm going to help you unleash your greatest power. You already have what you need to know. I'm just going to be reminding you.
Wow.
I don't know anything more than you do.
I'm very excited about it, though. I'm very excited because, you know, as you're speaking, I'm just thinking about, the wonderful co-creating that we are doing now and that we will be doing in a couple of weeks. And I'm very excited because even this little bit that you shared with us lets me know that we're going to dig deep, and that when we walk away, we are going to, at the very least, have a lot to think about, and to take back, tips and tools and ideas and new paradigms to take back into our new lives, because once we leave that convocation, we will be new. Yeah, we'll be refreshed.
Exactly. Refresh your potential.
I love it.
It's all of that and more, because there is only one of us. And when I see every human being, and this is me walking around fully awakened, though. You know, 3-4 years ago, I was half awake. And I say half awake because I would get glimpses of it. And what if I told you that I knew even before I was born that I was going to be doing this?
Yeah.
And that when I remember my birth. If I told you that, would you believe me?
I would. I don't know about a lot of other people, but I would.
I remember being born.
You're special. You're attracted to this movement. So
yeah. So I was choosing it because I had already chosen it before I came into the world. But I'm remembering bits and pieces. It's like you get snippets. It's like as you're progressing. It's kind of like with Jesus. You know, Jesus was a kid. He didn't have all the wisdom at a young age. He had to go through some trials and tribulations and grow up and everything, just like you and I. And then he comes into his own, and then he was chosen to do his life work, to step into his purpose, right? Everyone has a purpose for why they're here. There is everyone, every single living being, every animal, every life form has a purpose of why they're here. The challenge is for you to remember why you're here.
Indeed. This has been a whirlwind, and you know, I always every week I have to say the same thing. Time flies when you're having fun, and when I invite a speaker to this forum, they always say, "Oh, that's how long we're going to be on the phone," and I always say, "Don't worry, it's going to go by so fast. You're going to wonder how did it end, and can't we have some more time?" But we are going to have more time with you, and I want all of our listeners to remember that Dr. Chemay will be with us in Las Vegas in a couple of weeks, September 16th through the 18th, and will be taking us on this wonderful transformational awakening ride as she talks to us about living an awakened life. So I'd like you to be sure to join us, and there's the rest of today until tomorrow at 10:10 p.m. that you can take advantage of our special pricing, and you can see that at www.womenlivingontheverge.info. And Dr. Chemay, will you please tell our listeners where they can find more of your wonderful self?
Yes, they can always visit us on oraclesoftruth.org. It's www.oracles.org. And just a really quick thing before you conclude, Oracle stands for oracles, plural, not singular, meaning you are the oracle. Yeah, you hear oracles of God.
Mm-hmm.
The oracle is you, and there's many of us. The challenge is for everyone to awaken to who they truly are, and that is the inner essence that is driving their living human form. And that is what oracles is about. There is no one truth. There is no singular truth. The only singular truth that there is or ever shall be is that there are many, and it changes. That is what oracles is about. Helping people understand that there are many manifestations of truth and that truth resides within you. You are the oracle. That's it for me.
Thank you so much. You know, there is something that I meant to ask, and I kind of forgot about it at one point. What on earth does Shinshuri mean?
You know, that just came to me one day, and I just said, okay, I'm going to go with it.
No wonder I can't find what it means.
it has a Asian persuasion. Because I, in my past life before this one, I was a Buddhist monk Asia, living in Asia somewhere. And it has an Asian persuasion. And there is a city in Japan called Shinshuri. So I do know that.
Awesome.
Or a township or something like that. But other than that, there's no real meaning behind it.
I was curious. Yeah, I was curious, and I meant to ask. And so, you know. Here we go. We find that out. That's wonderful. It sounds like it has a beautiful sound. So thanks for sharing that with us. And thanks for sharing your time and your wisdom, your wonderful enthusiasm, and your, you know, a bit about your personal transformation and the wonderful work that you're doing with Oracles of Truth. I want to encourage everyone to go and visit oraclesoftruth.org and also to check out Oracle Radio and Oracle TV. When's your next broadcast?
The next broadcast is on Monday. We're going to do Oracle TV is Monday at 7 p.m. Pacific time. That would be 9 p.m.
9 p.m. Central.
No, 6 p.m. 6 p.m., I'm sorry. It's 6
p.m. Pacific.
So 6 p.m. Pacific. 9 p.m. Central Eastern, and it's entitled Finding Our Lost Brethren.
Okay.
And
wonderful.
We're re-airing it, and it's going to be part one of Finding Our Lost Brethren.
Okay, well, check it out, and please come and celebrate with us next week. We are in week 18, and the final week of this iteration of Women Living on the Verge of Evolution Telesummit, and we will have Edie Conrad from Dubai on the phone with us talking about her wonderful book that is going to hit the stands in just a couple weeks, actually on September 21st, and A New Dawn Awaits. So please do join us next week, same time, same place, and we are very excited about the International Convocation. I hope that you'll all come out and be with us September 16th through the 18th. So go to www.womenlivingontheverge.info and check out the registration process there and check out next week's speaker. Thank you again, Dr. Jemai McCallum. Thank you, and everyone have a fantastic evening. Good night, everybody.
Thank you.